Welcome to Them Before Us on American Family Radio, where we strive to put children before adults. Our goal is to educate the public on a child-centric perspective of marriage and family and represent the rights of children on policy matters. Now, here's the host and founder of Them Before Us, Katie Faust.
Welcome to Them Before Us Radio. I'm your host, Katie Faust, founder and president of Them Before Us, a global movement that seeks to put them, the children, before us, the adults, in all matters of marriage and family. I am also spearheading the Greater Than Coalition. This is the first attempt in all of the wide world, among the 38 countries that have legalized gay marriage. This is the first time any group has said, we're going to take that back. And that's what we launched last week, week before last, the Greater Than Campaign, greaterthancampaign.com. American Family Association is a part of our coalition. And that's what we did. We said, we are going to retake marriage. You have deconstructed, you have destroyed the walls around the natural family. And the inhabitants of those walls are children, and they are being ravaged and victimized by terrible policy, by a reorientation of our family law away from their fundamental rights and towards adult validation. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to retake marriage. Now, I say all of this as a precursor because at the top of our radio show, our Them Before Us radio, we always start with a little bit of Bible time. And I will tell you, many of you already know that I have been nonstop in Nehemiah. It is the handbook for what we are doing when it comes to creating this coalition that is working to rebuild not the walls of a literal city, but the walls of the spiritual social community that is the building block, the foundation of every strong society, the family. And so some of you may also know that I am doing the Colson Fellows this year. I am doing this huge program, a project of the Colson Center that seeks to help people think through a biblical Christian worldview. Well, they have devotions every morning, and I didn't do them in January. I said, I don't have time to do the devotions for the Colson Center. All I need to do is be in Nehemiah. It was feeding my soul. It was guiding my steps. It was opening my eyes. It was filling me with courage. And then I got to February 1st and I hadn't done any of my work for the Colson Center. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you a woman of your word, Katie? You have got to go back and you need to do your work. Like go do your month's work of devotionals. So when I did, when I got back into where I had left off, the whole thing was focused on Nehemiah. The whole session of the Colson Center devotionals was just Nehemiah. And it's going line by line, like little granular examination of each verse. And I have already gotten so much out of Nehemiah that I hadn't gotten out of reading it probably 20 times over the last like month or two. So anyway, all that to say, God's providence, right? God's providence, because I needed encouragement in my work. But I also needed to do my darn homework too. And so now I get to have both because of God's divine plan. Jen, anything that you want to jump in? Jen is joining me. She's a regular here on the Them Before Us radio. She's our training director. She runs our social media. She also loves the Bible and she is a graduate of the Colson Fellows program. Anything to say on calling Nehemiah and being a procrastinator when it comes to your homework, Jen?
They always warn you, do not get behind on your devotionals because it's like a 9-month program. So if you get behind, like you're behind. And I did the physical book, the physical Devo book. Do you have that one? Or are you doing the online, like checking it online?
I bought the book, but I realized that if I'm going to get this done, it has to be while I'm standing in line, returning something at Marshall's. So yeah. Unfortunately, I'm doing it mostly on my phone.
Yeah, they have a really beautiful devotional book. So I loved doing the physical book. And yeah, I've been recognizing I was feeling kind of low, I think, with the Greater Than stuff going, only because being part of the more front-facing pieces of it with social media, really seeing like so much hate, just even just like nasty comments, not even directed to me, but directed to you. But I'm dealing with all these hate comments or even just like personal attacks in a sense. And I was realizing, you know, I hadn't spent much time in the Bible. I hadn't spent much time in prayer. So instead of liturgizing myself with, you know, we talk about the good, true, and beautiful, I was liturgizing myself with people calling you names and saying, you guys are horrible and you're bigots, you're going to hell. And so I did a little bit of a refocus this last week, and I'm doing kind of a self-guided study through Isaiah. So I bought some commentaries for Isaiah, and I finally sat down and I'm like trying to read the intro of this Isaiah commentary to go deeper into that book. But I had a question for you. Some people may have heard that your Twitter got hacked. Thankfully, not the worst kind of hack, we think. I mean, it seems like Bitcoin spammer or something. And, you know, we're praying God will help restore it and all these things. And I was wondering if, like, man, was God making Katie take a break from Twitter? Because I know you're just on it all the time. And it's so important for our work. It really is our biggest account. It's the most people that we can reach. And with the campaign, we've had to use it for promotion. So it feels like really bad timing. But I was curious, you know, what you've kind of felt, maybe in a spiritual sense, from being forced not to use it for now, I don't know, 24 hours or something.
I was worried. And I'm not a worrier. I think a lot of women, I mean, women rate higher on negative emotion, which is that they are more prone to worry. They're more prone to anxiety. I'm not that woman. I really just don't worry in general. But I did worry about that because it's not just, you know, a lot of people think, well, it's social media. Like, what are you posting about? It is the primary way that we get our message out. And it's the way that we connect with this huge coalition that we are now leading. And it came at a really critical time. I mean, they took me out 6 days in to this huge launch where we probably had 5 million impressions on our launch video, where I was getting crazy engagement when it came to a lot of people talking about how, I mean, a lot of the objections were coming up on X with very high profile accounts. And I was able to present in the comments a child-centric response that very often was widely shared and people responded well to. So it was a challenging time to be put in spiritual timeout. But that is sort of what happened. You know, I thought once yesterday morning when we all had done what we could, lodged the complaint, changed the passwords, I was like, what do I do? I mean, I have to do something. So I went to the gym and I ran on the treadmill and I worshiped. I just worshiped my guts out. I put on this playlist that my 16-year-old son made for me. And I was like, all right, I know that I look like a fool. I'm not going to sing out loud because I got my AirPods in, but I am going to lift my hands, right? So here I am on the treadmill doing an 8-minute mile at different points, which is pretty good for me because I haven't run for a while, with both my arms raised, praising the Lord and thanking God for his guidance. And then a friend who texts me scripture every day, I think he just blast tests. You know, I got off the treadmill and it says, I will prepare a table for you in the presence of your enemies. And I'm like, okay, great. Let's eat, Satan. Come on, let's go. So it has been an opportunity for me to trust God and to wait patiently. And if all of it is ultimately resolved, that will be glorious. And if it's not, then we will just have to figure out what we do after that.
Yeah. I mean, worst case scenario really is that we have to start over from ground zero in terms of the social media. But even that, like, maybe God has some crazy plan with that, you know, like maybe this, I was actually, when you said table in the presence of our enemies, I thought about Elon Musk, not because he's an enemy, but because he's not a Christian that I know of. He's been very adjacent to many things. We know people who know him, kind of thing. And I've just thought about how when you got doxxed, you shared how getting doxxed gave you opportunities you wouldn't have had without it. And so it's interesting to consider that we'll be able to see in hindsight, maybe things that God did just from something that's very inconvenient and annoying. And, you know, feels like a big hindrance to the things we're trying to do. Who knows what God's going to be able to do with it. So
there's been so many times in my life where there has been a panic or a disaster. And you can look back on those and you can see how God used it for good. And in the, you know, litany of different things, the challenges that we face, this is a nothing burger. It just happens to be something that is critical for what I feel like is this task that God has given me at this time. And I'm so grateful because I feel like I don't have an awesome capacity for scripture memory. I wish I did. But there is one verse that I'm like, this should be my life verse. And it's, in all situations, keep your head. And for some reason, just saying that verse to myself helps me regulate. Like, you may want to panic. You don't get to. Like, as a Christian, you literally are not allowed to panic. You must keep your head. And that was really helpful, you know, because, you know, after we had lodged all the complaints and done what we need to do, I'm like, and now I will run with the strength of Christ. And then I'll come home and I will work my guts out until Twitter gets back up. And then I'm pretty sure my first tweet is going to be, Bitcoin has a right to their mother and father as well. So awesome. We had one quick news item that we were going to hit in this first segment, and it was this Grammy Award chat.
Grammys.
Dave, like, tell us a little bit about what she said, because it's all about the ice. It's all about the ice out. And, you know, now it's like made it up to the highest echelons of the celebrity power structures. And what exactly did Billie Eilish say?
The Grammys happened, which almost nobody knew about until after the fact when we make fun of it on social media, right? But Billie Eilish is a singer, pretty young singer. She and her brother went on stage. She has her Ice Out pin. Then she said, you know, no one is illegal on stolen land, which, okay, slogan makes you think, what are we talking about? What's happening? But what was funny about it is how many people immediately pointed out, I think she has a $14 million mansion on the land formerly owned by the Gabrielino Tongva people in LA. And a lot of people were like, okay, so give your land back. How hard is that? Give your land back, be consistent. Or actually, there's a GoFundMe for a guy in Australia who's like, fund me moving into Billie Eilish's mansion. She said, like, there's no such thing as stolen land, so I can move in whenever I want. So we're just seeing the, like, how is this going to be, how is she going to be consistent with this worldview?
Well, and it's very much, you know, something we've probably talked about here before. It is a luxury belief, an idea that she can say, it sounds good, and she will never have to live by the dictates of the things that she's advancing that increase her social status, but actually have pretty detrimental consequences, right? What she's saying is security for me, but not for thee. That's what she's saying. I can have security. I can have a fence around my mansion. I can make sure that I am protected physically, but not you, not the ordinary citizen. You have to allow anybody into your country. You cannot deport people that are here illegally, even if they have a criminal record, because nobody's illegal on stolen land. I will say, as a parent, you know, the whole ICE controversy is kind of affecting my kids, the ones that are in school especially. One of them is in public school and, well, high school, that is. And, you know, their schoolmates are all doing walkouts. And of course, every kid would rather take a cardboard sign and say F ICE and then walk up the street and chat with their friends rather than sitting in the classroom and doing their work. But it's so interesting because I'm like, my son and his friends are texting me like, is it illegal for the teachers to leave the classroom? What does the code say about the line between like the teachers encouraging or the teachers participating? So we're like looking through all of the public school guidance and we're trying to figure out if there's any way that they can like charge the teachers for leaving the building. So it's just interesting to me because I'm like, well, look around, because the handful of kids that didn't leave are probably going to be the ones where you're going to find like deep fellowship and the ones that are willing to resist the mob. And so, okay, fine. It's sort of like a self-sifting mechanism.
Yeah, that's so good. It's so hard in those school settings to like find the people you agree with. I remember in college on a political class, it was people having to participate in the message boards that then we would be like, go find each other in class to find that camaraderie. I mean, the people that resist what everyone else is doing to me just depict something stronger about that person than the person going with the mob.
I totally agree. That is something that you want to instill in your children. Obviously, you want to instill in them what is true. Teach them what is true. But there's another part of that that sometimes can't be taught. It can be modeled. And then you pray that they catch it. And it is the willingness to stand alone. You pray that they don't have to, Hopefully they'll be connected with other students, but there is a cost, and you want to make sure that you are modeling and encouraging your children to pay the cost for the sake of the good, true, and beautiful.
Welcome back to Them Before Us on American Family Radio.
Well, it has been an exciting week over at Them Before Us headquarters because we are spearheading this massive national coalition to challenge gay marriage. Go to Greater Than Campaign, click on the About Us button. We'll tell you what we're doing, why we're doing it, and who is involved. We had about 43 organizations publicly aligned when we launched the Wednesday before last. We've had at least 20 more join since then or tell us that they're going to get in on this with us. And it's a testament to the fact that this is the right way to talk about marriage. We spent some time talking about the failed ways to message about marriage, even if they're true, just in terms of convincing the courts and convincing the culture. Looking at this from the lens of child protection and as a matter of justice for children is something that people all across conservatism and Christianity are able to get on board with together. And so go to greaterthancampaign.com and look at the About Us page and take a look at the think tanks involved, the religious organizations involved, the Catholics, the Protestants, the state level organizations, the pro-life groups, everybody that's saying we can all unite on saying that children's rights should come before adult desires. Now, there has also been a lot of fireworks on social media around this. I spend a little more time on X before my account was hacked. Hopefully it will be restored soon. But what I learned is, you know, I had some engagement with some of the biggest, big names in the gay marriage world. People like Zach Walls, who was raised by lesbians, testified, I think it was in the Iowa State House when they were debating gay marriage. And he was like, why would you deny me the love of my two mothers? And he was like the superstar of that state level campaign. No surprise after that, he got a position in the Obama White House. So there was definitely a reward for him dismissing the importance of the father in his life. Another one was Dan Savage, who is one of the most vicious supporters of gay marriage. He was really cruel to people that disagreed with him leading up to Obergefell. Another was, let me see if I can get her name pronounced exactly right, Martina Navratilova, right? The tennis superstar who courageously came out in favor of sex distinctions in sports because you will destroy women's competition if you blur the lines between male and female. So she and I also had some high profile exchanges leading up to what I think might be the reason why my account was hacked, because that was so public and so widely shared. Jen, you were had a front seat. You were doing an awful lot of engagement on X, on Facebook, on Instagram leading up to that. What has your impression been as it relates to kind of this child-centric way of talking about marriage?
One of the things we're talking about as a team is the central themes of the disagreement. And it has stood out to me personally that they really, opposition to protecting children's rights in this way, doesn't really have anything new under the sun to offer us to argue with. And I've kind of pointed out, this is true, I think, about conservatives when you go to public school, when you go to a public college, whatever. The thing is, conservatives are always going to be more informed and better educated, I would say, when you've been forced to go into those settings, because I've been presented your argument 50 million times. You saw my argument misrepresented on CNN once, and you don't know my actual argument. And you have the talking points and the slogans like nobody's illegal on stolen land and love makes a family and whatever other cliches you've got. But the thing is, we've had to study and listen to your arguments for a decade now. So when they were doing opposition to you and they would say, well, marriage has nothing to do with children, you knew exactly what to say. It is about children. And I would say, well, you guys are thinking about it backwards. We're not talking about a couple who doesn't want to have kids in a sense. We're talking about a child exists and they have a mother and a father. So you're the one trying to flip around to say something we're not saying. And so I think that just stood out, is that you did have an answer for everything, because we've already thought through everything they have to say. And we just consistently can take it back to children's rights. You hate me as a gay person and you don't want me to have a family. No, we don't hate you. And what do you mean have a family? Two men can't make a child. So where's the child coming from? And you got the guy to answer, well, you can do sperm donation, egg donation, surrogacy. And it's like, yes, that's our point. Those things are unethical. They violate the rights of children. And then we go on. Mm-hmm. And, but the, I'm just going to call her Martina, the tennis player, because it is hard to say her last name. She's a Czech American. And I did a little, looked up a little bio on her. She is one of the most dominant athletes in sports history. A former world number one tennis player. She's won 18 Grand Slam singles titles and more than 50 Grand Slam championships overall. She redefined, like, was a pioneer of women's tennis. And then she's a longtime LGBT activist and publicly identifies as gay, says she's married to a woman, and then has become very controversial, quote unquote, because she's fighting against trans ideology in the sense of men coming and taking over women's sports. When I looked up some biographical information, it made sure to say, oh, she supports trans stuff. She just doesn't want men in women's sports. It's like, okay. And that was my tweet to her. She never replied, but I think it kind of could ping you on a way to reply. I was like, is this you? You are the one saying male and female are different and have distinctions. We're agreeing with what you say. You just want to have a distinction here and then not have a distinction when it would impact you.
That was such a good point. And then she and I kind of picked up on that again. And I told her, I said, you have so valiantly fought for sex distinctions in sports because you know that it matters. You know that women are going to suffer if you do not have those distinctions on the tennis court. Guess what? Those sex distinctions matter even more in matters of marriage and family. And women might be denied a medal or an award if the sex distinctions are blurred in sports, but they lose their mother or father or both when sex distinctions are blurred in the family. And, you know, I think at some point she was saying, mind your own business. You're taking away people's rights. And I'm like, how many times were you told to mind your business? Mind your own business. I mean, mind your own business, Martina. I mean, what a trans woman wants to do with his own body or her own body has nothing to do with you. And you're taking away people's rights. Trans people have a right to play in the sports. Trans people have a right to identify they want. And so it's just interesting how, like, those very same arguments that were used to push transgenderism were used to push gay marriage. And both of them should be taken captive and destroyed. Destroy those arguments. I think that she called me vile four different times. And I think a lot of nice Americans, especially Christians, wither under that kind of derogatory name calling. I don't like it. It makes me feel bad, to be honest. But we do not shrink back. We cannot shrink back because somebody is being mean, because somebody is calling us names. You plant your feet firmly on the ground and you stand there. And you do not let influence or bluster from anybody push you around. Because when you're standing firm on truths that have to do with children, one little movement to the left or the right means kids are going to be victimized. And that's just not something that we can allow for.
I mean, this is an example of the language she was using. She said, you are vile, invalidating any family that is not according to your beliefs. You should be victimizing the kids with single parents and gay parents. You would be victimizing the kids with single parents and gay parents, and you are absolutely a pathetic human trying to take away right from people. Scientific studies, my you-know-what, how Christian. And then she says later to something else, she wrote, what is vile is you trying to strip the same-sex marriage law. Go away. I have nothing to say to your condescending rhetoric, biological love, etc. Mind your own business would be a good place to start. History will not be kind to you. You're at the wrong end of it. They love saying we're on the wrong side of history. Like the progressives have been on the right side of history in a single thing. A single thing. What have they been on the right side of? Nothing. But that is hilarious to me. She has nothing to say to your condescending rhetoric, biological love, etc. That's the condescending rhetoric that we're using. The reality that a mom and a dad matter to their children. And what's so funny, the guy you mentioned, I think he's married and has children now. Married to a woman.
Zach Ball's the son of the lesbians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Married to a woman and has children. And you want to be able to say, oh, but you don't matter to your kids, right?
That's right.
So if you disappeared tomorrow and a woman showed up and she was loving, your kids would not even blink. That's what you're saying. That's what you're saying, Zach. There's no way he actually believes that's true.
Yeah. And what's amazing is the reason why he and I got into it is they quote tweeted our campaign video, which 3.5 million people did. And he said, if these people had their way, my sister and I wouldn't exist. And I was like, oh, how did you come to exist the same way every other child does? Because a man and a woman contributed the material necessary for you to come into existence. And then they cut your father out of your life. So I'm glad that you do not experience the kind of, you don't seem to experience the same kind of identity struggles that other donor-conceived children do. I'm glad that you didn't suffer from the father hunger that cripples so many other kids. But just because you seem unaffected and, like in myself thinking, politically rewarded for ignoring the deficit in your own life doesn't mean you should codify, normalize, and insist that other children endure that same similar loss. That's what I mean. Like I think that a lot of us would have said, oh, I can't talk about it. Somebody's own lived experience. I can't contradict that. Yes, you can. There are fundamental human truths that are real and true, regardless of who is saying them. We do not need to cower from anybody, whether it is a tennis star or somebody that was raised in a same-sex-headed household, who is saying that we do not get to insist and state the fundamental realities that children come from a man and woman. They need that man and woman. They're most likely to be safe and loved when they are raised by that man and woman. They get their biological identity from that man and woman. They're developmentally maximized when they're raised by that man and woman. You can say that. You don't have to have, you don't have to identify as gay or lesbian. You don't have to have been raised by a same-sex couple. You don't have to be religious. You don't have to be secular. You don't have to be atheist. You don't have to have suffered family loss on your own. Everybody can and should say that. Don't let anybody intimidate you out of telling the truth about children.
Yeah, agreed. And he wouldn't be famous if he said, I deserve to have my dad. And I love both of you, you know, my bio mom and then her partner. I love both of you. And I wish I had my dad. He wouldn't be famous. And he wouldn't be in Obama's administration. And he wouldn't have been able to test. Right. So
he's running for Senate in his state, too.
Yeah.
So now he's got a political career that, you know, he's got to keep towing the line because otherwise the progressives are not going to support him.
Right. So children, you know, in these situations are basically not allowed to tell the truth. Or you would pay a big social cost if you did.
I just, right before we started recording, got off the phone with a guy who was raised by two mothers, who has never wanted to share his story publicly, but he's always texting me, for years. And he'll say, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you said that. Oh my, and thanks for launching this campaign. And I said, you know, if you ever want to share your story, I will put it on the website. I'll even do it anonymously. I'll even just use your voice. And he goes, no, I just, there's no way if my mothers found out, I mean, they already will cut people off just if they vote differently. I could never say these kinds of things. And he said, when you said in the Jordan Peterson interview that the real people that are in the closet right now is children with LGBT parents, that's exactly right. He said, I am in a closet and I don't know if I can ever come out.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, we just have a few minutes left. We can hit this story that a bunch of people have been sharing to us. It was that a Florida couple is suing the Fertility Center of Orlando after they discovered the baby that they carried and gave birth to is not biologically related to either of them. Genetic testing confirmed the wrong embryo was implanted, and it raised the disturbing possibility and likelihood that the couple's own embryos may have been given to someone else. Also, it's a white couple with a black baby. So that was, you know, probably the first big clue there. And yeah, this case exposes all the things we talk about with IVF, that, you know, reproduction's treated as a lab process and children are products that you take and move around. You're told that, oh, we didn't scan or discard or do anything with your embryos. And also different people's children get put into different people's bodies. So this is just another, you know, we talk about this in our IVF FYI series on fertility fraud, actually an episode with you. So people should go check that out. But do you have any thoughts on this big story?
It has gone absolutely crazy because you have this very stark picture of a white couple with a very non-white child sitting in their lap. And when this first broke, there wasn't a picture, but I shared it because the family that had the baby, that gave birth to the baby, said, well, obviously we love her and we're bonded to her, but she should go back to her real parents. And I'm like, what do you mean real? What is a real parent? And obviously we all know that means the mother and father whose gametes made her. And so they recognize this is not our child in some very real way. Now, contrast that with the fact that the entire big fertility business is built on taking children from their real parents and handing them over to the not real parents. And it's only a problem when the adults did not get the baby that they wanted. These adults wanted their genetic child. A lot of adults that go through the process of IVF or surrogacy or using big fertility, they can't want, they can't have, or they're not able to produce, or they don't want their own genetic child, so they purchase the child's genetic mother or father. It's common for people to go home with a child who's not genetically related to them at all. The couple celebrates, and there's no news story because it's what the adults want. But as soon as it's not what the adults want, as soon as, wait a second, we actually wanted our own genetic child, now it's a problem. Now, here's the thing. From the child's perspective, it's always a problem. It does not matter if the adults are happy or unhappy with the arrangement. It doesn't factor into their identity formation if the parents purposefully separated them from a genetic parent or did that accidentally. Children deserve their mother and father. They have a right to their mother and father, and they need their mother and father. They're more likely to be abused in the home of unrelated adults. Biology matters to kids. It matters 100% of the time, not just when the adults want it to matter. And big fertility overall is totally unconcerned with that fundamental child right. They make money off destroying it. So it's time for us to get serious about this. This is a children's rights violation, whether or not there's an embryo mix-up.
If you'd like to comment on the show, email comments@thembeforeus.com. Once again, here's Katie Faust.
Hey everyone, welcome to Them Before Us is here for the comments with Jen and Sam. Hi, Sam. If you listened to our last podcast episode or our radio episode or saw our clips on YouTube, you know that we launched the Greater Than campaign last week, not even a full week from now. Not even a full week ago. And things have been blowing up. It's been very exciting. And a lot of voices have been on board or excited about it. And we've got quite a few folks who are not as excited about it. But what's the other big news as of today, Sam?
As of today, Katie Faust's ex has been hacked. So we have been working on that all morning, trying to get it back. We've been working with ex support and hopefully that'll be turned over. But somebody decided that they wanted to hack into her ex account, change it all to some kind of Bitcoin new profile and try to bank off of all of her followers. So we're working on that now because we want that control back.
I know. I mean, if you've ever had someone break in your house or your identity theft stolen or, you know, get hacked in some way, crazy feeling. It's the worst. I'm very thankful that this seems like a pretty common kind of scam that can happen, probably more along the lines of, you know, cryptocurrency scammer, Bitcoin, obviously promoting some kind of Bitcoin versus something really nefarious that could have gone down. So, you know, from a Christian perspective, it does feel like God's kind of helping us, protecting us. And also all of us, we're like, you know what? Now is a good time to check the security of all of our accounts. So, hey, if you're listening to this, just take a moment right now and go ahead and get that two-factor authentication put on your devices and stuff. I think, man, identity theft and hacking is, it's just a matter of time. It's kind of like when it's going to happen to you, not if. So it's definitely good to take those security precautions that we can. But, you know, the timing of it does seem pretty interesting in line with launching Greater Than, whether just the huge influx of followers and her voice being amplified made her more of a target or if there was some more nefarious things behind it. But we're going to get it back and we're pushing forward. And we'd like to talk about in the next few minutes some of the pushback that we were getting
kind of, there's some a few different themes that we saw quite often. We'll exclude just the your homophobes and bigots language, because it's not that interesting for the listeners. But Sam, do you want to start off with just showing one of the, you know, some of the objections that we were getting, and how would we, from the Them Before Us perspective, answer these?
So Katie has been a champ, which is why it's so annoying that she was hacked, because she has been going back and forth with some of the big critiques, and she's actually been like ratioing people on X, and her responses are just solid. And it's because this is not something new to us. This is something she has spent a long time thinking about. And it's honestly just a really good case. And so some of the objections that we've been dealing with, someone said, you know, if gay marriage should be illegal on biblical grounds, then divorce should too. And what Katie had to say about that was, we're not going to make a biblical case. We're actually making a case based on how children are victimized when marriage is redefined. So again, they're the ones who are the first to jump to religion and say that we're the ones using religion, even if we don't bring it up. Of course, this all does boil down to God at some point, but we don't have to use God in every single, you know, response. Basically, what we would say is that it's victimizing children, and whether or not you believe in God, you should be against the victimization of children. And so that's the first argument that we would make.
That's one of the big themes we've seen, is people immediately jumping to a religious argument and saying, cutting us down, saying, you're making a religious this, you can't push your religion and your God on me. So you can't tell me that same-sex marriage is wrong. And the response, like Katie did, is, well, the response that Them Before Us is using is to say that this is not a religious argument. This is an argument based in natural law and biological reality. Every child has one mom and one dad. You need to give me a case why they should be denied either of those two people. I don't need to make a case that they should have them. That's the default for all of human history. So you need to make the case that they shouldn't have them. And there's some Christians even that disagree with us in terms of you should prioritize the Bible. You should use that as your primary authority. And so we don't disagree, because our staff are Christians. We don't disagree that it is the highest authority. We don't disagree that it is our authority as Christians. But we do think it's important to take a different tact for this argument. We're saying that argument doesn't work for people who don't see it as authority. So you kind of have, you don't have a starting place. We're trying to say, let's find some common ground in a starting place even a non-Christian can agree with. And so that's the reason we're taking a tact, not arguing from religion.
Yeah. But either way, we have both arguments anyway. So if a religious person comes to us and they want to hear that perspective, we offer it as well. So it's not that we don't have a religious argument as a backup as well. But we just, when we're talking to the general public, then we like to start off with something that we think we all can agree on.
Yeah, exactly. All right. One of the next pushback comments that we got was someone saying, if these people had their way, my sister and I and millions of other children of LGBTQ parents wouldn't exist. And Katie replied, I don't believe you shouldn't exist. Like every human being who's ever lived, you do exist because you have a biological mother and a father. What I oppose is normalizing, promoting, or intentionally designing family structures that require children to lose their mother or a father. That's what gay marriage does. And while you may not personally experience the mother hunger or father hunger so common for children with LGBT parents, your individual story doesn't justify endorsing a system that guarantees that loss for other children.
Yep, that's 100% right. We hear that argument a lot with IVF too, because a lot of children and like a lot of adults today were born because of IVF or exist because of IVF. And so their argument would be, you don't want me to exist, or you don't want my daughter to exist, or this is the only way I brought my son into this world. And what I feel like people don't understand is that, like, first of all, once the child exists, then everyone on our side fully agrees that they have full protection, they have full rights, they have full, like, value as a human being. But what we're trying to prevent is children who do not exist yet coming into a broken system. You know, we want children coming into homes that are actually set up correctly for them, you know, whole homes that are loving and married, and homes where they don't have to like come into a broken situation. And so, yeah, we would say it's the same way that you wouldn't want two teenagers to get pregnant, or you don't like pregnancy coming from, like, you know, grape, or I guess rape. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on here. I'm so used to TikTok rules, you know, or something along those lines. Like, of course, no one wants pregnancies to result from those things. But once they do, when you look at that child, you know that that child is valuable and that child deserves rights. And so you have to be able to separate the child that's conceived from something versus the process of conception, because those are two different things.
Yeah, 100%. Another one that came up so often was that marriage is not about kids. And so many people said, a lot of gay people don't even have kids. They don't want kids. They don't care. So it's not about kids. I was always saying, you're arguing it backwards from what we're saying, because I'm saying a child exists. They do. They have a mother and father. I mean, I'm arguing from a different point. A child already exists. They have a mother and father. They're arguing from a point of two people get together and, hey, they don't even want kids, so it doesn't matter. But I liked Katie's response here too. She said, if marriage is not about kids, why have all 38 countries that have legalized gay marriage simultaneously deconstructed a child's claim to their mother and father? The reality is that marriage has everything to do with parenthood and then, and therefore children.
Yep. Another one that I did like, a comment that Katie did going back and forth with somebody on X before she was hacked was, they said that they're basically trying to talk about the LGBT community and like how they can become parents, like out of in and out of wedlock. And Katie said, can you please explain to me how gays simply have kids in or out of wedlock? And the other person said, well, single parent adoption, surrogacy, or getting some sperm. And Katie said, so even when a same sex couple is married, a person of the opposite sex is still required for a child to exist, which means that for the same sex couples to have kids, a child must necessarily lose a mother or a father or both. And by contrast, when a married man and woman have children, the child is naturally united to both their mother and father. It sure would make sense if we had some kind of institution or legal destination that encourages the latter arrangement for the sake of children, wouldn't you agree? Which kind of ties into the last one, which is like, that's the whole point of government being involved in marriage, is because it's this one institution that is designed to protect the children that are involved in these situations. And like, we want the parents to stay together for the sake of the kids.
Cool. Yeah. It's just crazy because so many people are saying we shouldn't be allowed to have kids. It's like, what do you mean have kids? You mean procure children in some way nowadays? Because back in the 90s to early 2000s, most of it was heterosexual couples might split up, or they had never been married or whatever, and then they repartnered with someone of the same sex, and so you had kids from your ex, basically. The only way you could get kids. IVF wasn't as common, surrogacy, sperm donation, egg donation, not as common. But now you can procure children in a variety of different ways. And so they think, you're saying I shouldn't be allowed to go procure children however I want. And we are saying, yes, that's true. That's what we're saying. You know, one that's adjacent to that, that it's probably in here, but I'm just thinking about it right now, is, well, you know, abusive heterosexual couples have children. So why aren't you worried about banning them from having children? And we're not arguing that the government should be banning people from having children, though, of course, the government should be invested in stopping any kind of abuse that's going on. But that's an interesting, you know, they're flipping to the government actually controlling your body. And we're saying, well, no, right. You can't do it, make a child by yourself. You have to use a third party. And they're flipping it to, then the government shouldn't let just a man and a woman produce children. And it's kind of like, what?
The left is so confused about bodily autonomy because they throw it out there all the time trying to benefit their argument. But anytime you follow their logic through, like they'll say, bodily autonomy, you're not allowed to ban abortion. But then they'll also, in very serious ways, say, well, if we ban abortion, then we should also make teenage boys get vasectomies until they're ready to have kids, because that's only fair. And it's like, that actually is against their bodily autonomy. And you're coming after minors now. So that's super creepy. And what a crazy argument. And then anytime that we try to explain to them, like, no, the government actually preventing people from having children, like physically stopping them or banning creation of children, that is against your bodily autonomy. Right. But when we're talking about processes like IVF and industries like surrogacy, that's different than the natural creation of children between a marriage.
Yeah, totally. We've got a bunch of people talking about Jesus didn't say anything against it. You know, Matthew Vines was one of the big accounts that Katie was interfacing with. And he is a God and the Gay Christian author and a well-known kind of red letter. I only talk about the red letters from the Bible kind of guy, I believe. And what's funny is he was simultaneously talking about how polygamy was bad for kids. And I was like, bro, it's the same definition that Jesus uses in Matthew 19, marriage is between one man and one woman. And he's using this logic to say it's only supposed to be two people. So that's another just, if you don't care that it should be one man and one woman, you cannot say it has to be two people. You really can't. There's no point in sticking to that number without observing the difference in the sex differences between a man and a woman. And what they have to their children.
Yeah. My favorite also is mind your own business. And usually when I'm doing that kind of conversation, like on the pro-life stuff, I just started responding with no, because it saves you so much time. Mind your own business. Nah. No. Right. But Katie responded and she said, well, where is the moral line and what kind of victimization should we keep quiet about? You know, so it's a really good question, because it's like, it's funny how when it's something we care about and when it's victims that we're trying to protect, then we should be minding our own business and it shouldn't matter what happens. But when it's victims that they think, you know, again, like how many people are outspoken about illegal immigration, even though they're not, illegal immigrants themselves, yet they can't mind their own business on that topic. And so, again, we're pretty consistent where it's like, well, we always believe that you should speak up for victims. And so we're going to not be quiet.
Yeah. Right. That's good. All right. Well, thanks guys for joining us. Find us at Here for the Comments on Substack, greaterthancampaign.com, and we will see you guys or talk to you soon.
Hi, everyone. This is Jen with a special addendum to the end of the episode, because I just wanted to give you an update that a few days later, we did get Katie's Twitter or X account back. We're so thankful. Her new handle is Katie_Faust, which is nice. It was just a Bitcoin scammer, so I don't think they were even able to go through her messages. They didn't do anything other than retweet hundreds of Bitcoin and crypto accounts and posts. So I had to go through and I undid all of those as soon as Katie got it back. And then it was actually very hilarious because Bitcoin crashed yesterday. So you're listening to this, and this was a few days ago. And so that was actually kind of a pretty big joke. Oh, sorry, you lost the biggest children's rights advocacy account and then Bitcoin crashes. So sorry, everybody. So we are very thankful to have it back. The work is going to continue. So hope you enjoyed this radio edition of Them Before Us. Come and support us on all the things, socials and the websites. We appreciate you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.